shining in the afternoon. I'd really like to tell you, but I feel it's too soon. My actions are dictated by the phase of the moon. The phase of the moon. The sun, it isn't hiding when it's...
Welcome to the Lars Podcast.
I'm Ralph.
And I'm Ben.
And we're the Lars.
That's right. And this is our first show back since Comic-Con.
Yes, it is. And this is a non-lost podcast.
That's right.
Man, you know, I'm having lost withdrawals.
Already? It's only been like three months.
And we still have like 6 months. We still have 4 months until the season 3 DVDs come out.
Oh, my gosh. When I came in, you were watching a Lost documentary or something.
Yeah, it was on season 2.
So
the anatomy of an episode.
Ooh.
Holy
anatomy is kinky.
So much time before Lost comes back.
And you're having withdrawal now? Like, did anything in particular bring it up? Was it the Lost panel?
You probably heard my theory.
Yes, I heard about it.
You heard about it. I told Jack about it because I was just going to give it to him. I was just going to say, here, Jack, here's a crackpot theory for you. And then they liked it so much that they asked me to be on their show. And so we did successfully.
Well done.
And with a new way of doing it, thanks to the people from MetroBuzz, I now know a good way to
call someone in.
To record from across the country or wherever
nice.
The world and have it sound like they're in the same room.
Using technology.
Yep.
And that's awesome.
So
So that's useful.
Yeah, it'll be useful when ever the golden ticket is found.
When the golden ticket's found. I think that it would be cool if we did like a book episode with Amy, if we had Amy in on an episode.
Definitely.
That'd be cool. So you had this theory. Do you want to talk about it here, or is it copyrighted by them now?
No, they could go to Jay and Jack and check it out. I'm sure you guys have already subscribed to them if you listen to us. I just assume.
Nah, dude. We've got some hardcore Lars-only listeners out there.
Oh, yeah?
Fucking represent.
Well, those guys have like
100 million
like
listeners.
Three times the amount of listeners that we get.
That's true. That's true.
But
the Darwin Army is fierce.
It is. It is.
They make up for their numbers in ferocity.
Yes.
So you had a theory on the Jay and Jack podcast that made you hyped up for Lost again? Like just thinking about your own theory?
I don't know. I guess once I started thinking about Lost, then
just all the wheels clicked back into place, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I remember that show."
My mind was preoccupied for a while with the Transformers movie.
Yes, that was something you spent a lot of.
Yeah, there's like all these movies are already out now, and I think the only one I have left to really look forward to is Superbad.
Superbad, yeah,
which is one of my priority films this year, and
yeah, and after Superbad, it's like things drop off for a while.
Yeah, until like very early October.
So that's maybe in that period when we don't do so many movie reviews, we'll get into some of our special episodes we've been picking up.
Yes,
we've been cooking up a bunch of special episodes for you guys. So
yeah,
that'll be some fun programming in the future.
If you guys are fans of other things besides Lost,
yes,
but specifically like fans of a certain thing,
yeah,
we'll try to get to those certain things.
Yes,
in episodes.
That's right. Superbad. Well, Rush Hour 3.
Yeah, I'm kind of lukewarm. I mean,
yeah,
I'm going to enjoy it, but...
But you're not...
I'm not fired up.
Wasting a lot of energy being anticipated on it.
No, definitely not.
And so now that all those things are out of the way, it leaves you open to worry about how Lost has left you.
I guess so.
It's like you need to throw yourself into your work, man. Take your mind off it. Forget her, man. She never loved you in the first place.
I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. So we have plenty of time to mull that over.
Yeah. There's plenty of time between now and Lost. Did you want to talk more about...
And then it's 16 weeks, and then we're back to in the exact same boat as we are now.
That's true.
God,
we'll have to do like a week-by-week marathon. Something like the 21 weeks of Bond that we did.
Uh-huh.
But like maybe a different movie or a different type of movie. And then talk about that week-by-week.
Yeah.
We could do something like that.
Or blindly pick a television show.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of television shows... I decided to sort of look at a behind-the-scenes thing for the new Flash Gordon series coming to Sci-Fi in USA.
Yeah,
and
I noticed that you seemed to be more fired up on that than you were previously.
No, but well, I wasn't really fired up on it, but then I saw some pictures of the dude who was playing Flash Gordon, Dale,
uh-huh.
and stuff like that. I'm like, okay.
Okay.
Or at least it's not like Smallville where they're trying to make it something different.
Where he never wears the outfit.
Yeah. And so today I decided to look at a featurette, for lack of a better term.
On the internet?
Where it's all the actors. Yeah, all the actors are telling about their characters or whatever. And I'm not happy. So there you have it.
Flash Gordon is definitely
making me not happy.
Uh-oh.
Ming the Merciless.
Yes.
A has hair.
B
is blonde.
What?
And C is totally a white guy.
What?
Zarkov.
Okay.
Does not have a beard.
That's doable.
Is under the age of 30 and appears to be a computer hacker.
Oh, boy. Oh, man.
The whole thing with Flash Gordon is this, you know, this group of people who are, you would never hang out
together. Who should be together, no.
It's essentially Star Wars A New Hope. The old wizard,
right.
The farm boy,
right.
The scoundrel, and a fucking monster guy.
Yeah.
That's the whole fun of Flash Gordon was, you know, Dale, just Dale.
Yeah.
Some girl, a polo star, a scientist, and just some random person.
And they're just
kind
of thrown together by circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of dumb. It sounds like they're kind of trying to youth it up a bit with the computer hacker.
Yeah, but I mean,
is he? And he's like a track star now. Flash Gordon is a track star.
Yeah, which is fine.
That's fine.
Flash Gordon originally was a polo player, and then in the 1980 film, he was a
quarterback, New York Jets.
Exactly. And so I'm like, you know, as long as he's just an athletic guy,
yeah,
it's fine.
But yeah, Zarkov should be an older dude. Ming the Merciless should definitely, if not actually be Asian, at least be a white guy pretending to be Asian.
Or
like Max von Sydow.
Just don't make him Ming. If you're
have
gonna,
it be a different bad
him,
guy.
There
were other bad guys, right? Was it always Ming?
No, there was like the Queen of Mars and things like that. But
yeah.
I mean, it's Mongo, apparently, and
Mongo is like a collection of planets and stuff.
No, it's one planet that Ming is the ruler of.
I'm thinking of the 80s version, apparently.
I'm really not only familiar with the old serials.
And neither of us have read much of the comic strip.
I haven't read any of them.
I've read some, but not much.
Because
the reason why I said I thought you were more fired up is sometime on the Blogspot this week, you're like, Flash Gordon's coming back, exclamation point.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow, exclamation point. Ralph's into it.
Yeah, I think today I put 2 exclamation points on oh.
Oh, oh, this
Palmer,
sucks.
I think Palmer had sent me a message on MySpace, and I replied like, yeah, it's going to be cool. And then I decided, let's see how cool it is going to be.
Let's put my money where my mouth is.
Oh. So anyway.
Well, that's too bad, because I was kind of looking forward to that one.
Well, I'm still going to watch it. I'm going to see, because I don't mind changes that much. I'm not one of these fanboys.
You're not a purist.
Yeah, so we'll see.
You're not going to be like, oh, they're raping my childhood.
Yeah.
By changing something, by making it different.
Speaking of changes, today I read that J.J. Abrams is trying to get his former MI3 co-star to be in the next Star Trek picture, the prequel.
Okay.
And he wants him to portray the character. Spoiler warning.
Spoiler.
Whatever the captain is before James Kirk in the, from the pilot, the unaired pilot.
Christopher Pike. God, I should have known that a lot quicker. I might have to hang up my pointy ears after that gasp.
So, and put on your cool guy outfit.
Put on my cool guy ears. My regular dude ears. Are you talking Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Did I not say Tom Cruise?
No, you said like MI3 star.
I looked at a picture of the original character, Mr.
Christopher Pike.
Yeah, and yeah, he kind of looks like him.
I could see that.
There's nothing wrong with Tom Cruise.
He's the one that ends up, spoiler alert for the 1960s Star Trek, the original series, pilot. He's the one that ends up like horribly disfigured, and he's in that wheelchair where all he can do is beep. Like beep once for yes, beep twice for no.
Oh, is that where the head's just sticking out?
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. I know that from Trekkies.
They spoofed it a couple times on Futurama, which is a great show for spoofing.
And Thunderball. That's not true, but it kind of is. Go watch Thunderball.
Go watch Thunderball, and you'll see if he's right.
I was talking to Stevie about religion and Scientology and stuff like that. Uh-huh. I finally got my Madman Gargantua.
Which is your Bible?
Which
is that,
been,
is that why you're thinking of it?
No, but we're talking about Mike Allred, who's well known as a Mormon.
He's a Mormon.
And we're talking about religion and stuff, and, you know, people might not have the, you know, may not understand, like, certain religions and stuff.
Right.
And they'll view it as crazy.
Yeah.
But, I was raised Catholic, and I've been to, like, recently I went to a Catholic baptism.
And did you think
and
it
I'm
was
like,
crazy?
I'm like, this is no more crazy than what people think about, like, Scientology or... or other like religions. It's making me laugh. So
there's a lot to be said for perspective.
Yeah, I saw you rolling your eyes when I mentioned Tom Cruise, and I mean, really, is there anything wrong with Tom Cruise? Like,
there's nothing
other than he's crazy.
It's not his Scientology that caused me to roll my eyes. It's just he's overblown in the media lately. Like, I don't want to hear another story. But the main reason I rolled my eyes is I don't want to hear the nerds complain about Tom Cruise being in their Star Trek.
Oh,
like,
yeah, whatever.
Oh no, God, what's gonna happen?
I don't care about Star Trek, so to me it's like, oh, cool, it's Tom Cruise.
Well, I mean, I care about it, obviously. Uh-huh. I'm kind of a big Star Trek fan, but it's not even that bothers me, because I think he's a good actor, Tom Cruise.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, well, he's an okay actor. I've seen him do some pretty good stuff. Like, he was great in Magnolia.
Yeah, I thought he was awesome in Collateral.
Yeah, so he's got some chops.
War of the Worlds. I thought he was awesome in War of the Worlds.
Yeah, totally.
So, I mean, and I loved MI3, so...
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. It's just...
His track record of recent has been great, so...
Yeah, it's just the outcry. And I'm not even sure that there would be an outcry, because I can never tell where the nerds are going to go with things.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's like one of those things where I'm sure it's a cameo.
Yeah, probably.
And I can't believe I'm sitting here discussing Star Trek.
But. Yeah, well, hey, we had a whole episode about comic books one time, so.
That's true.
Speaking of comic books, do you want to talk a little bit more about the Comic-Con?
Yeah, let's go for it. Let's get into some Comic-Con stories.
You want to do that, like, as a separate section?
We'll call it a separate section, but.
But we're not going to do
anything. I'm just going to keep recording.
Okay, because you said let's do it, and then you looked at the computer, and I was like.
Oh, no. This show's
I feel like editing. We talk about editing a lot.
I already geared up this show to be at least, or at the most, 2.5 hours long. So
okay, so we're good.
So
let's start chatting.
We're at 12 minutes right now.
I think one thing we could talk about is purchases.
Yes.
What things that either you and I purchased at Comic-Con?
Yeah, I actually didn't do a lot of purchasing.
Good.
But I did get my hands on some pretty awesome stuff.
Tits.
They're
pretty awesome.
No, actually, I didn't. I was trying to think of things that I got, and none of them. There's one... print that I did get from Kevin Dart that I framed because I had to frame the correct size.
It looks really good, dude.
Yeah,
I
like
that
it
when I came in.
I like it. But yeah, I went to. I'm gonna plug these guys because they're really cool, good artists.
You go to them like 2 years now, right?
Yeah, this is the second year, and I'll go next year. Chris Turnham, Turnham.
Okay.
And Kevin Dart, they're part of Fleet Street Scandal.
Fleet Street Scandal.
Okay. Check them out on the internet. If you're my friend on MySpace, go ahead. I put their prints on my MySpace page so you can see what they look like. I need to add my new ones.
Yeah.
Those I might actually have to scan, which I don't want to do, but we'll see. I'll have to try to find those pictures online.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got some really cool prints from both of those guys. And I think that's pretty much the only thing I purchased.
That's the only thing I saw you purchase, other than the Baconator.
Oh, well, let's get to the Baconator in a second.
That's a separate story.
Let's close out this quote segment with that.
Did you stumble across those guys last year? Is that how, or did you know?
It was a funny story. There was this artist named Ragnar.
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 That sounds like a Scandinavian name.
And Stevie and I were looking through his stuff, and it looked pretty cool, but we couldn't find anyone to, like, answer questions. And I was like, oh, this kind of sucks. So we just kind of left. And, like, a few booths down, there's these two guys, very, I don't know, hipster-looking guys. And their art was really cool. Like, I really liked it. Fleet Street Scandal.
Yeah, it looks like.
If you should check it out.
Old posters? Kind of like.
Kevin Dart does mostly homages to. They're posters for non-existent movies.
Okay.
Sometimes they might be movies that have existed before, and pulp novel covers.
Yes,
that's his deal. Chris Turnham. I don't know how
Turnham.
I pronounce.
It's probably Turnham.
He does just kind of just retro sort of. I don't even know. Landscapes.
He does, like, scapes, yeah, like
landscapes and
There's some character work.
Yeah, there's some character. It's different. It's
I mean, we don't
definitely
have
retro.
We don't have enough of an art background to kind of describe a genre, but yeah, it's very retro feeling.
It's just something that I look at and say, "Hey, that's really cool."
And
looking.
It caught your eye.
Yeah, and I definitely went back this year because I wanted to get some more of their stuff.
That's kind
of
cool, is buying art at Comic-Con.
Yeah, like, that's, I mean, I had asked them online prior to Comic-Con if they sell like original stuff, and apparently all of their stuff is done in the computer.
Oh, cool.
So I can't like buy a painting. The only way I can is by getting one of their limited edition prints. Yeah.
That's kind of cool. It's all computer generated because it looks like a watercolor practically.
Yeah. Yeah, that one
that's really cool.
What'd you get?
I purchased a book of White Ninja. Have you ever seen the webcomic White Ninja?
I saw the book that, I think I remember seeing the book that you got.
Yeah, it's pretty funny stuff. The people that write and draw it were there at the booth, and I don't know them from Adam. Like, I can maybe name three webcomic artists by looking at their faces, and these are not them. But the guy was like, "Hey, do you like our stuff?" And I was like, "Yeah, White Ninja, sure." And I bought that book. I gave it to Jocelyn. But he was like, "Yeah, okay, so what's your name?" And he was like about to write it, and I was like, "Oh, it's for Jocelyn." And he was like, "Okay, what is she like?" I was like, "I don't know." So he drew a picture of White Ninja getting a nosebleed on his pillow.
That's cool.
He said, "Hey, Jocelyn, look at this." And the dude that writes the comic signed it too. And I was like, "Hey, thanks, guys." You know,
that's cool.
No extra charge, just because I was buying the book.
That's cool.
That was really cool of them. And they actually, just last week, there was a, or it was like this week, it was like Monday, White Ninja got a nosebleed on his pillow. So apparently it was a concept that he'd been kicking around for a while. That's a very funny webcomic. And then I bought, my friend Harmony is really into this this artist, Mark Ryden.
Okay.
He does this, like, totally surreal, overly detailed stuff. And it's like a mixture of cutesy-tootsy and, like, just disturbing imagery. Like
kind of like the Happy Tree Friends or what those guys are called? Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot like that stuff. Because there's one called The Bunny Butcher. That's this really cute bunny. But he's like a butcher in a butcher shop, and he's chopping up meat, and there's like all this blood dripping everywhere. Or there's one called Little Boy Blue, and it's this, you know, cute little kid on a tricycle wearing like a pink little outfit.
Who gives head?
He's covered in. Who's giving everyone head? he's got like a swastika, and his eyes are like creepily narrowed and mean. So anyhow, I bought a set of gift cards that featured one of his drawings.
Cool.
But that was about it for me. I bought Radioactive Man at the 7-Eleven.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm glad because it's like the first time I've ever bought a comic book at, you know, quote, Comic-Con, end quote, if you can count the 7-Eleven.
And you didn't even get it in the convention center.
No, I probably didn't even bring it in the convention center.
I got a fair share of autographs.
Yeah, you did really well on that.
Mike Nelson from Mystery Science Theater.
Which was awesome. You made him laugh. I have a picture of you making him laugh.
I got Michael Cera from Arrested Development,
which was really cool.
I got
that was a good get.
Lloyd Kaufman, who directed the Toxic Avenger and other trauma films, and the folks from Hot Fuzz, Edgar Wright and Nick Frost.
Yeah,
and was luckily, I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast, but it was my main. It was my main, like, holy grail.
That was your goal for the con. No, yeah. You could mention it because we did it on... That was after Thursday. I think it was on Friday that you got that.
No, but I had mentioned that I wanted it.
Oh.
It was a Comic-Con exclusive, limited edition, Hot Fuzz DVD sleeve.
Which is cool.
And it was signed by them. And
it's
that was
especially
awesome.
Cool because we were talking about this on the way down to Comic-Con, like Ralph's been getting DVD sleeves signed for a while now.
Yeah.
And it's funny to think that apparently that's the thing, or apparently that's caught on enough that they would make a whole Comic-Con exclusive and raffle that off.
Yeah.
And it was also, I guess, because the DVD itself wasn't out until the next week, and these guys were going to be signing autographs. But still, I mean, well done for you that you picked that out.
Yeah, it was pretty lucky circumstances.
And they signed something else for you anyway. Like, they signed your Shaun of the Dead, too.
Yeah,
right?
They were... Well, it turns out that the line was for people to have whatever they wanted signed. But if you had a lucky ticket, then they would give you the limited edition sleeve.
You made them laugh, too.
I made them laugh. You made them laugh.
Yeah.
you while I was in line and you were waiting with Palmer to jump in to take a picture of me with them, you decided to make a Hot John sign.
Like at the last minute.
Yeah. So I tossed you a Sharpie and you made a sign that said Hot John.
Which, for those of you that have been listening to us for any length of time, it comes from Look Around You, one of our favorite shows. It's,
yeah,
season two, series two finale.
Or the series two final.
Yeah.
In which Nick Frost is amongst the crowd during a live show and he's holding a sign up that says Hot John.
So I did that to Nick Frost, and it made him laugh, right?
It made him laugh, and it made Edgar Wright bust out his iPhone
and take a picture
of you. Which
I looked up.
It did not appear on his MySpace page.
Not yet. So if you're out there listening, Ed, you know.
It's funny because he did post the picture of him with the two guys that dressed up like Nicholas Angel and Danny Butterman from Hot Fuzz.
Nice.
And I'm waiting for him to accept my friend request so I could comment on that picture and tell him that those guys cut in front of me in line just because they're dressed up. So that went down.
I'm sure he'll be glad to hear that.
We have a lot of Comic-Con pictures up on darmlars.net, including links to our MySpace pictures and links to, what else?
Metro Colleen's Buzz, MySpace pictures.
Colleen's MySpace pictures.
Stuff like that.
Jay and Jack's stuff. Also, I want to let you guys know out there that while I was at Comic-Con, I was hanging out with the Geekscape guys a bit and appear on episode, I believe, 33 of Geekscape. Given a short Simpsons review, which I was not prepared for.
No.
So luckily I'm prepared for that today. But if you guys really want to know what Comic-Con's about, check out the last two episodes of, or the last three episodes of Geekscape.
Yeah, they get,
they got a lot of interviews and they spend a lot of time on the floor of the exhibit hall interviewing passerbys.
Which is cool. That'll give you a feel for the flow.
Yeah, between that, the Jane Jack panel, which should be posted by the time we post this, and the Metro Bus video stuff, you'll get a good grasp on what you're missing if you haven't gotten a chance to go to Comic-Con.
And if it convinces you, I mean, go next year. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know.
And even though there was 125,000 people and it was sold out, I'm glad that there's a cap.
Yes.
Where they will stop selling tickets, because even though it was really crowded and we had to stand in a few lines, I still think it was pretty manageable.
Yeah,
for the most part,
I really like the idea that they allow there to be a sellout point, because I feel like otherwise they would just keep going until
otherwise next year I'd be like, oh man, great.
150,000, 200,000.
So
it's good to know that there's an upper limit.
Next year, go to Comic-Con, check out all these podcasts and all their Comic-Con stuff. And
I have to give you the rest of the pictures, because we did that picture upload like on Thursday.
Yeah.
I didn't take a lot of pictures after that. I got kind of, it's funny that I got really tired by the time the weekend was ending.
Yeah.
Like on Saturday, I was walking the exhibit hall, like stumbling the exhibit hall, and I didn't even finish it. I was like, I'm just going to sit down.
It was funny because Friday night, I'm like, man, this is so great. This is having so much fun already, and it's only Friday night.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I knew, it was Sunday, and I was sad.
And I got like a stomach flu or something Sunday night. No, Saturday night.
Saturday night.
So Sunday we just took care of business, essentially.
Stomach flu business.
Yeah.
You want to talk about the Baconator? Do we have any more stories?
Yeah, go. You go talk about the Baconator. Yeah. I mean, mine was fine. We went to Wendy's.
Well, here's the kind of the longer version. Other than just going to Wendy's, because it was Friday.
Yeah.
And we'd gotten up early, and we decided to stop at the 7-Eleven on the way to the convention, and I had a blueberry muffin and a Propel.
I had two hard-boiled eggs and a radioactive man.
So, anyway, it was a very busy day that day.
Yeah, geez.
Wait, was that that was Thursday, actually.
It was Thursday.
It was Thursday because we had, like, the Lost panel and we recorded.
Yeah.
And then after we recorded, I was like dead tired. And then some guy wanted to shoot a documentary.
Yeah.
And have us included.
Yeah. He interviewed us for a documentary about Lost.
So I was beat tired and we get back to the room and hang out for a little while, take showers or whatever, and then decide to go to Wendy's at 11:30 at night.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And granted, I haven't eaten
We didn't eat much at all that day. We didn't even follow our own advice about packing a lunch.
Yeah, I had eaten the blueberry muffin like at 8, maybe 9.
Yeah.
And this is 11 at night. So we go to Wendy's. And me, Ryan, and Ben each decide to get a Baconator.
Yeah, which is their new sandwich.
Which is a, you know, a double cheeseburger with bacon.
A lot of bacon.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But that's the selling point, is that it's more bacon.
I usually find that bacon burgers don't usually have a lot of bacon. It's like two shitty strips. So
yeah,
it was a good size, a good amount of bacon.
And fast food bacon never tastes like bacon.
Yeah.
So it's like sometimes I don't even bother ordering it.
Yeah. So problems began at Wendy's.
Did it really?
That was phase one. Yeah, I went to the bathroom. I don't know if you remember that. And
I do remember that.
It was a pretty grody bathroom. And then we walked about a mile back to our hotel room.
Yeah.
Where Colleen and Jay and John were all meeting us, and Cliff were meeting us. And I was like, well, damn, this... My stomach is not feeling so good, and they're going to be coming any minute now.
Yeah, your stomach was not going to be crowd friendly.
I wasn't going to be jumping in our bathroom. So I decided what to do is go into Lenny's room, which was adjoined to our room.
Yeah,
by a door, and use their bathroom instead. So I'm a really nice guy by doing that. by going through phase two and three, in their bathroom, so that when Jay, Colleen, and John and Cliff came to the room, it wasn't
going to be in our area. It's going to be where
smelling
to
high heaven to like a Baconator. So I'm in there, and I'm pretty sure I'm done.
Right.
I'm like, okay, I'm good. And Colleen and John and Cliff and Jay decide, hey, let's hang out in
Lenny's
room.
Oh no.
So it's like, wow, hotels sure don't come equipped with air fresheners.
No, they don't.
So here's a bit of advice when you're out and about. And you have a Baconator.
This
and
is the moral.
There is no air freshener.
But you're in a hotel.
Bust open a packet of coffee and make a pot of coffee.
Mmm.
Coffee scent overpowers Baconator.
It does. It trumped it.
And it was great.
And then one of Lenny and Los's like roommate guys was like, did someone make coffee?
It was, yeah.
Yes.
So Comic-Con advice for next year. Eat throughout the day.
Yeah.
Don't wait, like, you know, 16 hours to...
We gave that same advice, though. We just didn't take it. I brought peanut butter so I can make peanut butter sandwiches, and it was in my trunk the whole weekend.
I had a peanut butter sandwich once.
Yeah, I had one once, too, because I stole your peanut butter.
So, anyway.
Yeah.
That was Comic-Con.
That's thinking. That's quick thinking, dude.
Yeah.
I've been in situations like that where, like, I had a lighter... But not matches.
Well, that was the thing is I did the there's no matches. I had a lighter, so I just rolled up a bit of toilet paper and kind of lit that.
I've done that.
But I was afraid because there was a sprinkler system in the bathroom, and I was like,
yeah,
oh man,
yeah, you don't want to set that off. And be like, oh man, what's off the sprinklers? Oh, this heinous dump I just took. Essentially,
yeah, that's what I wanted the firefighters to be like. Holy shit. Someone have a Baconator?
Does someone have a Baconator in here?
So that's like pretty much our Comic-Con
story. That's
stories.
It. That wraps it all up. It's
there was the whole Simpsons thing where we saw the kids from Superbad, but
yeah,
I mean, there too much awesome happened for us to talk about all of it.
It was cool. I went to the Futurama panel.
Uh-huh.
That was huge. Big fan of Futurama, and it was good to see all those people together again because they're making Futurama, which is kick-ass. And it's always fun to see funny voices come out of regular-looking people.
Uh-huh.
Like, we got to see Maurice LaMarche. He did the brain from Pinky and the Brain.
And he did the voice of a character in my Stick It in Your Cue segment this week.
That's right. That's very right.
Who else? Billy West was there?
Billy West, John DiMaggio, Katie Sagal from our show Lost.
Oh, yeah, that show Lost we know about.
Yeah. Someone asked, like, how do you guys come up with all your different voices? And Katie Sagal said, well, I use my voice. So, yeah, it was cool. It was good to see it all. And also, we had a caller last week call in to talk about how David X. Cohen actually had to change his middle initial because of the
Writer's
Guild.
Because there's already a David Cohen.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah, I think I heard that somewhere. He probably mentioned it in
like
the commentary.
Like on a commentary or something.
Yeah, I've listened to them all, but it doesn't mean I haven't memorized.
That's
but, yeah,
cool.
Comic-Con was good. And while we were at Comic-Con, we saw the Simpsons movie.
I was going to go with the segue from the grading camp.
Oh, do that then.
So, while you watch the... Wait, I don't know. Fuck it. Let's get the movie reviews. It's Futurama. I was trying to get, I can't tie Futurama to The Simpsons. I'm a fucking moron. All right, let's get to the movie reviews, guys.
5 o'clock in the morning, I hear the phone ringing. Yo, what up, Dunn?
What up, son? Sorry, boy, you sleeping?
Nah, just finished reading this ill-ass
movie
novel.
Movie reviews is the segment of the show where we review movies.
It's where we
completely lost it.
No, it's where we review movies. You got it right.
All
right. And for this week, in honor of The Simpsons, we'll be using the rating system of Doe and Woohoo.
There you go.
Woohoo being good.
Yes.
And Doe being bad.
Yes.
Just so you know.
Well, let's jump headfirst into it. Ben, let's hear the Simpsons superfan review of the movie.
Man, it was everything I wanted the Simpsons movie to be.
And a whole lot more.
And a whole lot more. Everyone should go see it now. Actually, if you go see the Simpsons movie, one thing I think you should do is buy two tickets because it's good to spread out when you're at the Simpsons movie, I guess. I'm just trying to get them extra money.
They're fine.
They're fine.
They're making all kinds of money.
They're going to be A-okay, which I'm stoked on also.
Yeah.
But from Ralph Wiggum doing the fanfare till the Gracie shh at the end, I was laughing. Uh-huh. I was enjoying the show.
You know what would have been awesome if instead of Gracie Films, it said Gracie TV, and it was her sitting in front of a TV.
That would have been cool.
Oh, man.
They did a couple of reality stretching things. Like there was a couple, like a reference to Fox TV, and there was two moments that were specifically PG-13.
Like they broke the fourth wall.
They broke the fourth wall, essentially. In a sense, but none of the characters did.
The crawl at the bottom.
Yeah, but...
I was talking to my sister and my nephews at the Flyers game last week. Go Flyers.
Go Flyers.
And we were laughing at the part where Homer gives the middle finger. But Steven, my youngest nephew, who's 9 or 10, he's 10, mentioned that the Simpsons don't have middle fingers.
That's a very good point.
And I'm glad that the 10-year-old pointed it out to me because it's true.
It's very true.
So the PG-13 rating can only be because of one thing.
Because
of
one
thing. I don't want to spoil that because that is too good of a joke to spoil.
It's worth watching the movie just to get the shock of the PG-13 moment, which was freaking hilarious.
Yeah, but...
But that's right. There's an awesome scene. If you haven't seen the movie, there's an awesome scene where Homer's flipping double deuce at the camera, and you're right. There's no middle finger. So
I want to go back and see what finger he has up. It's
it
got to
be his ring
finger.
Yeah.
Assuming that the Simpsons are not missing their or are missing their pointer finger.
Well, whatever they're missing, he's probably flipping the middle of the fingers and not including the thumb.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
So anyway, if anyone
has an animated GIF of that, you know, send it to darmalars@gmail.com because I fucking want that hard.
Yes.
It was funny, dude.
I know. I'm not a huge Simpsons fan. I mean, I like the Simpsons. I haven't really followed them too closely.
Yeah.
For the past few years, I really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
And this is something I wish I said on the Geekscape podcast because I was totally thrown off. But back in 1989, when the Simpsons started, a lot of parental groups were up in arms about the Simpsons and their dysfunction and whatever.
Yeah.
And I think over the past 18 years of the series, it might have lost some of that edge that it was known for at the beginning.
Yeah.
And the movie was great because it actually brought some of that edge back.
Yeah.
It's almost like Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
Like there was definitely edge in Saturday Night Live at the beginning, but through the evolution of it, it kind of changed into something else.
It's become the mainstream.
And I'm kind of wondering if maybe the movie might jumpstart The Simpsons to get them back into that old mindset of, you know, let's really push the boundaries of family television.
That would be kind of cool. I mean, I think it's a double-edged thing. I think part of it dropped off because The Simpsons did mellow out over time.
Uh-huh.
But I think also part of it dropped off is because our perceptions have mellowed or that pendulum has swung a little bit. Uh-huh. So things that they can't get away with, things that they did in the beginning, anyone could get away with now.
Yeah, I read or saw something with Matt Groening saying that they can't even show an ass on the TV show
anymore. He said that at the Futurama panel.
And it's just like one of those things where it's like, that's
That's ridiculous. Absurd. And they should be trying. They should be trying every week. And maybe they do, because we don't know what happens behind closed
doors. If they were to do it and then Fox blurred it out, then they could make a joke about Fox blurring it out in that episode. And then that's the kind of edge that I want.
It would be cool to see some more of that back. I mean, there is some of it. There have been, like, anti-Iraq war comments, which I thought, when they made that, I was like, wow, that's the most timely I've ever heard The Simpsons be. Because normally they try to avoid stuff like that so it doesn't look old 10 years down the line. And also, wow, you can have a stance about something. It's been a while since I've seen that.
Yeah.
So, Brian made the comparison that The Simpsons movie, to him, felt more like the old Life in Hell comics.
I haven't read them, so I would have to take his word on it.
It's just that, to him, it felt more Matt Groening related than maybe the show has in recent years.
Yeah.
Either that or he was talking about something else, come to think of it. Oh, well.
But still, it definitely has...
It did have that.
It's a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I definitely give it a woohoo.
Yeah, definitely a woohoo on my part. Not as many celebrities as you might have thought. Like, I thought it was going to be like a slam dunk, celebrity after celebrity after celebrity. Yeah. But there was like five.
I counted two.
There was Green Day Green Day. Albert Brooks.
And
Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks.
Well, that's like it.
And a brilliant performance.
Yes, Tom Hanks was outstanding.
Third Academy Award for that guy right there. you want to get into Ultimatum?
Yeah.
I want to talk about the other one last, because that movie needs our money.
Normally we review movies in the order we saw them, but we're going to make a jump from tradition this week and talk about The Bourne Ultimatum, starring Matt Damon.
Starring Matt Damon, Julia Stiles, David Strathairn.
Yeah, and that blonde chick. Pamela Landy. I don't know who that is.
Whatever.
Yeah, some girl.
Go for it. What do you think?
A little one-dimensional. I found, like, even though there was the scenes where, like, he was being chased or he was doing surveillance, even though I thought there was some awesome creative stuff in there, and it was cool to see him get one up on people and the stuff he had to go through to do that, because he had to be, like, super smart. Even when that stuff was happening, I was like, this is cool and everything, but I'm kind of bored. Not exactly bored, but it's just, like, there's just one thing happening. And I guess I thought I was kind of hoping that they'd be building up a plot at the same time. Matt Damon barely spoke at all in the film.
I know. I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was pretty much more of
the same.
More of what we've seen. It almost feels like a more perfect trilogy than even something like Lord of the Rings, which was all shot at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, each Lord of the Rings movie still feels like a separate movie. It doesn't feel like one big long movie to me.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But the Bourne movies totally, like,
smooth.
Yeah, just like completely run into each other.
Yeah.
Matt Damon doesn't really talk a lot, but at the same time, I didn't feel like he needed to. Like, we already know he's super kick ass.
Yeah.
That it's all about his actions. It's about what he does.
Yeah, and he only had to.
He really, when he does talk, you listen. It's like that whole Silent Bob thing where, you know, he doesn't say anything, but when he does, everyone's paying attention.
Exactly.
So it gets his point across more, I guess.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think even when he wasn't talking, he was still, if he wasn't doing a stunt, you know, there was not a moment where I thought it was Matt Damon. He was always Jason Bourne. I think he's a pretty good actor, too. I always thought he was kind of a cake eater.
I really enjoyed this movie.
John Powell.
John Powell's score, excellent. I noticed that, because I have the album, I got that before the movie, and I listened to it nonstop.
Of course.
It looks like they used a lot of music, or a lot of music from Identity and Supremacy
within
the film. Which, at first, I was like, oh, well, that's kind of lazy. But then at the same time, I thought, you know, they probably used them as temp tracks.
Yeah.
And it probably just sounded great. And, I mean, it's all the same themes. It's the same composer. And for some reason, it did not bug me whatsoever.
That's cool. Yeah.
So.
Well, that makes sense. Like, tie it all together.
Yeah.
The third movie is supposed to be a synthesis of the first two, right?
Yeah.
So, that's cool. Yeah, I liked it. I didn't dislike it. It felt like there could have been more, but I'm not even sure what more there could have been, you know? It just felt light in areas.
Yeah.
But that
Jason Bourne. I mean, Jason Bourne had one goal.
Yes.
And it seemed like the quote bad guys, or the, let's say, antagonists.
Yeah.
Had more layers.
They did. Yeah, they did. But
even, I mean,
even their lairs were mostly Bourne related.
Yeah.
Like, up after the first act, all they had to do was focus on Jason Bourne. So it was like, these guys are trying to find him. He's trying to find answers. I like I said, I don't know what more there could have been.
Yeah.
You know,
and then Landy's whole thing is trying to figure out whether it's ethical or not.
Yeah.
I really liked the movie.
Yeah.
I loved the ending.
With Julia Stiles?
I just love the ending.
Oh.
Like, let's say, last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything, but I thought it was done really well.
It was. Because
I could have gone either way.
They really could have.
But the way they went kind of made me happy. It put a smile on my face.
It was satisfying, yeah.
Yes. So I definitely give it a woohoo.
Yeah. I will give it a woohoo as well.
If you're fans of the other two, you're going to like this one.
Yeah. And so, if you haven't seen the other two, you could make it through this one okay.
Yeah.
But the full story plays out throughout all three movies.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I've seen the Bourne Identity twice.
Okay.
And I've seen Bourne Supremacy once. And the only reason I saw Bourne Identity twice is because I saw it again
before
to bone up on Supremacy.
That's funny.
And didn't do that before.
You didn't
this
do that
one.
This time.
I know, it's fine. It was like, it's weird.
Yeah. I mean, you'll be fine if you haven't seen them.
Yeah.
But like you said, it feels like one big story.
Yeah.
And you definitely, I think, get much more if you've seen the other two.
Yeah. So,
but that one was good. And then what we saw before that, though.
Probably, this is my favorite movie of the bunch.
This is my favorite movie in a while. Definitely the second funniest movie in theaters this year. And that's a close, close call.
Are you talking Hot Fuzz?
Yes.
I laughed more at this movie than Hot Fuzz.
I like
Hot Fuzz a lot.
Yeah.
But when I saw it, I wasn't blown away as much as everyone else.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think this is probably the funniest comedy that I've seen all year.
And the movie we're talking about is Hot Rod.
It's Hot Rod. And I know what everyone's thinking. Oh, that movie looks lame. Well, obviously, because no one went to go see it because it was like number 9 at the box office.
We saw it.
It made like $5 million.
That's because they was playing in theaters like the one we saw it in, where we saw it in a theater with like 30 seats.
Yeah. But I have to tell you guys, take a leap of faith, listen to the Lars, and just go check it out. You're going to laugh.
I mean,
I don't care what you think the movie is about or what it's like. It's not like that.
Yeah, exactly.
The trailers do not do this movie justice.
No. Yeah, you're right. Because, I mean, there is an element of like slapstick humor, but it goes beyond that. And it's also really good slapstick. And then on top of that, that's just one layer of, like, several funny layers.
Yeah.
Really funny stuff. And it was the first movie directed by Akiva.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
These are the Awesome Town guys, a.k.a. the Lonely Island, a.k.a. the guys who do the SNL digital shorts.
Yeah. So, you know, you might be familiar with the phrase kablamo, which we use often, which comes from one of their songs. Andy Samberg, Jorma
Taccone, and Akiva Schreiber.
And
I don't know how to describe it. The humor is out of left field.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
I couldn't catch my breath.
Yeah.
In that one scene?
Stevie surprised me. She was laughing the whole time.
Yeah.
And
the soundtrack is kick ass.
Probably the greatest soundtrack since Bourne Ultimatum. Probably since Grindhouse, I think the last time I really took notice to a soundtrack.
That was a really good soundtrack.
And then before that, probably Crank.
Yeah, Crank was good too. The freaking Jefferson Starship song.
Yeah.
But the soundtrack, I mean, I haven't bought it, but the songs in the movie at least are 100% over the top arena rock, just fucking get you pumped up.
And the score by Trevor Rabin, who's a person I'm not particularly a fan of. I haven't heard enough of his stuff to really take notice, but I have now because the score to this movie is brilliant.
Yeah, it mimics it perfectly.
It's almost like, I don't remember the score to The Karate Kid, but I can imagine.
I assume it's like that.
They just essentially ripped it off of Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Like, this movie apparently is set in 2007.
Okay.
Because there's internet and cell phones.
That's true, yeah.
But those are the only two things that lead me to believe
that it's
not in the 80s.
Yeah.
you got to see this movie, guys.
It's awesome.
And if you don't like it, we'll send you a Darmler's button.
There you go.
In the mail.
There you go. Send us your address.
Yeah.
But you have to genuinely have seen the movie and not like it.
Yeah.
So, a definite woohoo from me.
It goes beyond woohoo for me. I don't even know.
I was happy. I was like, you know, I had a rough week at work. And here I am Friday night watching this movie, and I'm very happy that I'm seeing this movie.
And just laughing our asses off the whole time.
We should go again.
I want to go see it again. I'm going to go see it again.
Let's see it before 12.
Before 4 o'clock?
Yeah.
They need our money. $5 million. Come on, guys.
Come on.
Listen to the Darmalars.
Give Andy Samberg a break.
The guys, you will like this. Yeah. And you have the Darmalars guarantee. If you see it and you don't laugh, we'll send you a button.
There you go. We'll send it right to your fucking Vulcan ass.
Darmalars@gmail.com.
A-holes.
So that's it. You want to get to the next segment?
Yes, let's do it.
All righty. What do you say?
What do I say?
We stick it in your queue.
Let's do it.
All right, let's go.
You go first.
Let me go first.
I called it.
There is a director that I like. A lot of people say that he's style over substance, and that's Tim Burton. But I happen to like all his movies, including the one that Danny Elfman didn't score. And that film is Ed Wood, starring Johnny Depp and a bunch of other people.
Yes.
Ed Wood is the story of the notorious bad film director, Edward D. Wood Jr., and Johnny Depp portrays him. And it essentially is a slice of life documentary, or not documentary, a story that takes place during the Lugosi years. The three films that Bela Lugosi did for Ed Wood, which is Glenn or Glenda, Bride of the Monster, and Plan 9 from Outer Space. And they say that Ed Wood is the worst director of all time. And watching the movie it's pretty interesting. Like, even if you don't know about filmmaking, Tim Burton directs it in such a way that you know he's doing it wrong. Johnny Depp plays Ed Wood, who is a transvestite. And he is essentially surrounded himself with a band of misfits, which includes Bela Lugosi, as portrayed by Martin Landau, who won an Academy Award for the performance.
That's right.
And Rick Baker won an Academy Award for his makeup.
On Lugosi?
On Lugosi.
Yeah.
Also stars Patricia Arquette, Sarah Jessica Parker, Bill Murray, Jeffrey Jones, George the Animal Steel.
As my cousin, Tora Johnson.
Yes. Vincent D'Onofrio as a special appearance.
With a special voice for that appearance by Maurice LaMarche.
Yes. As well as, who's the guy who plays Vinny Del Pino again?
Max Casella. Yeah.
Okay. And it is pretty interesting. I'm not going to say it's a first of all, it's a funny movie. It's funny if you can kind of see that these people really existed.
Yeah.
It's a strange movie, but it's pretty interesting. It's one of these movies that I watch and I laugh at a lot, but I could see how people might not fully understand these movies. It's hard to describe.
You kind of have to have a soft place in your heart for the bad film.
Uh-huh.
Cuz like we watch a lot of MST3K.
Yeah.
You've watched some of Ed Wood's movies before and after this.
Yes.
You're a fan of The Forbidden Zone. So if you already understand the idea of a bad movie and how it could be good, or the idea of cult films, then I think that'll definitely help.
It's one of those things where if you're ever sitting in a movie that's bad and you're watching it, you're like, who are these people that did this?
Yeah, how could they allow this to happen?
This is the odd group of those kind of people, and for me, it's really funny.
Johnny Depp, I think, is brilliant. Johnny Depp's brilliant in everything.
Johnny Depp's performance in this, it's a toss-up between his performance in this and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, for which I think is his best performance.
Which is funny because he's playing real people in both of them.
Yeah, and they're both very different.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if there is a base Johnny Depp, because there's always a different Johnny Depp every time.
Maybe Nightmare on Elm Street?
Maybe that's how he is in real life.
I don't know.
But
I highly recommend Ed Wood. It's I don't know.
It's his. It's Johnny Depp's charisma that can sell me on the idea that this many people would make these movies with this guy. You know,
yes.
Or that he could even sell it. What's your guy's name? The guy that becomes his producer or his distributor?
Mike Starr.
Mike Starr. He can even sell himself to Mike Starr, who clearly knows bullshit.
Yeah.
And like it's the force of personality, and then I think Depp captures that, you know, brilliantly.
Yeah.
Of course, Martin Landau got the Oscar, but that's cool too, because he was fucking hilarious in this movie. And sad. And
I guarantee you, in one of our previous podcasts, we have mentioned Pull the Strings.
Pull the String!
And that's where it comes from, the
film. Or Let's Shoot This... is it Let's Shoot This Sucker? Or
fucker.
This Fucker? Or...
Do as I command you! Ed Wood, check it out. Stick it in your queue. I'm not guaranteeing that you'll like it, but I really enjoy it and think it's worthwhile.
It's in black and white.
It is in black and white. And I think it only would only work in black and white.
Yes.
I don't think it would work in color. Just based on the art direction.
It would be too weird to... Well, because, it's kind of almost directed like an... Not directed like an Ed Wood movie, but it looks like...
It looks like it's straight out of the 60s.
It's cool because it would be too much of a transition to go back and forth between his world and the world of his movies.
Yeah.
The way it is now, it's the same. And you kind of get the feeling that that's the way it was for him.
Yeah.
So, definitely check it out. Stick that in your queue. Hey, Johnny Depp was in Pirates of the Caribbean 2. Did you know that?
Yeah.
With Bill Nighy, who plays Davy Jones in that movie.
Hey, he was in that movie that you're going to suggest to everybody.
Yeah, he's in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is my movie for this week.
Yes.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy started life as a radio series.
Yes.
And then a book, and then more books, and then a BBC series. And then, most recently, it was this film that came out in 2005, starring Mos Def, Sam Rockwell, Zooey Deschanel, who's super
Malkovich
cute as a button.
In that?
What's that?
Is Malkovich in that?
John Malkovich, yeah. Malcatraz. Martin Freeman, who us Americans might know as Tim from the original Office.
Yeah.
Alan Rickman and Warwick Davis playing the same character.
Of robot
body
guy.
And voice. A robot. Simon Jones, who played Arthur Dent on the TV series, plays the voice of the book. And Stephen Fry, who's huge in Britain, he was partners with Hugh Laurie, who you might know as Dr. House. They did a lot of stuff together over the years.
I know him as Dr. His House.
Dr. Hizzy. Flippity flobbity flu. And he's the voice of the book. So, anyhow, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is the story of a man in Britain who wakes up one day to find that they're trying to tear down his house to build a highway.
Yes.
And then he goes on to find out that aliens are trying to tear down Earth to build a hyperspace highway.
Yes.
And things just get crazier from there. He meets up with a friend of his who turns out to be an alien, and they start hitchhiking throughout the galaxy.
Uh-huh.
And it centers the title of the movie is the title of a guidebook that Mos Def's character writes for.
Like, imagine our Darmalar's Guide to Comic-Con, but
exactly.
For the galaxy.
But for the galaxy. So, and it's very funny. I've been steeped in the mythos of the show of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy for a long time. I watched the BBC show growing up. My parents had it on tape. It's like something I would bust out and watch every other month or something. Watch that tape.
Uh-huh.
I have it on tape now, like a professional tape. Finally,
how's the show?
The BBC show, very funny. Mm-hmm. If you're into like the British humor. Kind of slow and bad in terms of the sci-fi and like production values.
But you know what? It's for this type of storytelling.
It's
seems
better.
Like it's perfect.
Yeah, it fits just fine. They did some innovative stuff with the book effects on the TV show.
Uh-huh.
You know how like with Tron, for example, they did like animation to make it look like computer animation.
Yeah,
they did stuff like that where characters would be reading the book, and then also the book animation itself.
Uh-huh.
It was really cool. The movie is the latest in a long line of things to tell the same story.
Yeah.
And it's different. So if you've read the books, if you've seen the TV series, and you haven't seen the movie because you're afraid it's going to ruin things for you,
and
I would say go see it.
And from what I gather, Doug Adams, is it?
Yes, Doug Adams.
The creator. Seems to almost embrace the different versions.
Yeah, every time they do it, it's different, and that's
like
fine.
But he's fine with like it's almost like he almost doesn't want one set story or one set version. It's
and you know, funnily, like he got so fed up with the characters, you know, before he passed, unfortunately. He got so fed up with the characters that they kept asking him to write a book that the fifth or sixth book, I think it is, killed them all in the most horrible way and made sure they could never come back. And it's like, it's one of those books that I'm just like, yeah, that never happened. Yeah, you know, just the four books happened. But he actually wrote, before he died, he wrote the screenplay for this movie. So who knows how many rewrites it went through, but if there's ever anything that has a stamp of approval from the original creator, it would be writing the screenplay.
I never listened to the radio drama or never read the books or never saw the show. Went to go see the movie, and I have to tell you, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Very funny. There's the British sense of humor. I don't even know why, how they do what they do.
Yeah.
Like, there's just, the only way I can, say it in words is like a cadence. Like there's a specific tweak on what they do that makes it British humor that I really find funny.
It's hard to define, but yeah, I think you're right. It's something to do with like we would make the joke in a different spot and we would turn right. But they make the joke two paces after that and they turn left. Yeah. And it's still very funny.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought the movie was great.
Yeah.
Give that one a woohoo, and I say definitely stick it in your
queue.
So
that's the thing. That's my recommendation. If you've seen the show or if you've read the books and you're like not wanting to see this movie, see it anyway. Trust me, it'll be more than fine. If you haven't seen it, watch this movie. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's almost like Serenity. I went into that without seeing it, and I loved it. Definitely check it out. If you want to see a really funny space comedy.
There you go. Which
there
is
you go.
Kind of rare.
Don't get Galaxina.
No.
Don't stick that in your queue.
No.
Don't put Ice Pirates in your queue. Well, maybe later. But if you want to see a really good space comedy, check out Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
That's right. Put it in your queue. And if you like it, put the BBC series in your queue because that's out on DVD.
I'm going to do that as soon as we're done recording.
Awesome.
Because I want to check that out.
Awesome.
Because I enjoyed the movie so much.
See, there you go.
All right, what do you say we get moving? I don't have a two-minute debate set up for this week, and we've been running kind of long.
Okay.
So what do you say we get out of here?
Do we have any plans for this upcoming weekend?
You're packing.
Yeah. I'm going to go see Rush Hour 3.
Yeah, I'll see Rush Hour 3.
I might still try to drag you to see The 10.
Okay, we'll see.
There's this movie coming out called The Ten, which is directed and written by David Wayne.
I now know what it's about.
You're going to try to be spoiler-free.
I know, but it doesn't... When you go to enough nerd pages, shit kind of
jumps
out. It's kind of
hard to stay spoiler-free. Well,
I'm actually more interested now just by knowing the concept.
Oh, that's good. That's good. It's a set of ten short stories that talk about... Each one of them talks about one of the Ten Commandments.
But they're not literal Ten Commandments. They're slightly altered?
I guess, and they're hosted by Paul Rudd.
Yes, star of the Super Nintendo commercial that's floating around online.
What?
Yeah, check my MySpace page.
I will. That's awesome.
Producer Ryan put it up.
So that's it. I mean, thanks to everyone that came out and saw us at Comic-Con. It was cool to talk to Colleen and John from MetroBuzz. It was cool to hang with Jay and Jack from the Jay and Jack podcast.
And Cliff. Who was editing the whole time.
Yeah. It was really cool to get to know Cliff. He's a cool guy. Jana
was, yeah.
Stuart. Palmer and Lori.
Everybody. Michael.
We heard that someone was there wearing a Darmalar shirt, but we never saw them, so.
Oh, can I talk about something real quick?
Yeah, go.
I moderated this Jay and Jack panel, which was kind of.
Congrats, by the
which,
way.
Which I kind of wanted to do. Just because, I don't know, it sounded like it'd be fun to do. But then Jay and Jack were going to have someone else do it, and they decided once they saw the room was filled that they didn't want to do it. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it, and pretty much unprepared. But anyway, I want to talk about something about someone that was there. Have you heard this?
I've heard about this, yeah.
Jack had mentioned there was a dude from JAG.
An actor
from JAG at the panel, and I wasn't paying attention until I listened to their podcast. I didn't realize that this actor from JAG that he saw was at their panel. I'm like, that's cool, you know, whatever.
That's cool.
I like, you know, I never watched JAG. I think that's pretty much up to our grandparents to watch that show.
That's one of those random shows.
That's just blasted forever.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's great. Catherine Bell is quite the looker.
Yes.
On my top 10 list from last summer.
That's right.
So I'm like, oh, that's cool, you know, whatever. And Jack said, yeah, he sent us a phone call. I'm like, oh, that's cool, you
know. That's really
cool. I'm like, I wonder who this guy is. So I look him up.
What's his name?
I'm gonna butcher it.
Oh, okay. I think I know who you're talking about. That's funny. He was in Bikini Summer.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. Jack recognized him from Little House on the Prairie. So I was like, well, maybe I'll see. I'll see what this guy, who this guy is, and I'll tell my sister.
Okay.
Because she's a big Little House fan.
Oh, that's right. That's
and
right.
And I looked him up, and dude, he's from like a movie that I'm going to be sticking in your queues soon. One of my all-time favorite comedies ever.
And that is?
Ever. Ever, ever, ever.
The big hit of?
1987.
And it stars?
Mark Harmon.
And
directed
it's,
by Carl Reiner.
It's about and takes place
music
in?
Music score by Danny Elfman.
Oh, that's right.
Summer School.
Summer School. Yeah, with, that guy was totally in.
He was Kevin from Summer School, and I pretty much shit my pants. I'm like, holy shit,
yeah.
Kevin from Summer School was there. So I send a message to Jack back saying, holy shit, it's the guy from Summer School. And I was really fired up, and I was really sad. I'm like, shoot, I didn't even get to see him.
You didn't even?
But then now I'm wondering, maybe I hand him out a button, because they started handing out everybody buttons. And I'm like, oh, man, that guy's awesome.
Yeah.
So I was like, kind of bummed out. Then Jay sends me the phone call that he, like, apparently he called them and saying, you know, oh, if I didn't want to make a big to-do that I was there because, he's like, I came to see you guys.
He didn't want
to
steal the spotlight.
Lost. He's like, it was kind of your moment.
That's cool of him.
And then he mentioned us.
Ah.
So he's totally listening to the Darmalars.
Well, if he's listening now, we're sorry that we can't pronounce your last name, but I'm pretty sure you were in Bikini Summer and Ski School.
Ski School?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was in Ski School.
Oh, you know what? I think Stevie mentioned that he was in Ski School.
He wears like a flipped up like neon yellow hat, and he does like audio video work for the guys when they pull their pranks on the big rich skiers.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he staple of 80s comedy. And
so,
Jack.
if you're listening, Pete, I'm going to call you Pete.
Is it Pete?
It's Peter.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Fuck. dude, Summer School is the greatest movie ever.
Yeah.
Mr. Shoop, what was it like putting on the makeup, being with the shit in the classroom?
Yeah.
God, that movie's awesome. Okay, next week, that's going to be, I'm going to.
So, if you're out there, give us a call, 206-338-4261.
Call anytime. You'll be put in our Lars Line segment at the end of each episode.
Ralph thinks he got you a button, and he wants to say that he really likes Summer School.
Drop us an email, darmalars@gmail.com.
If you're him or anyone else, drop us an email.
And visit us at darmalars.net. That has links to our MySpace page, our Frapper map. Maybe we should put that up there.
We should, yeah.
Our contact info, our where you can subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yeah.
And everything you need to know, darmalars.net.
And there was a couple of stylish-looking kids walking around the Comic-Con wearing these bright yellow Darmalars shirts. Those were pretty sweet. And I heard that you can get them at shopsamandnate.com.
Shopsamandnate.com for your Darmalars shirt.
Maybe we should do, like, a commercial. Like, just do, like,
let's
a...
Let's do one.
Okay.
Hey, Ralph, what are you playing with? I'm playing with my Darmalars t-shirt that I got from shopsamandnate.com.
That looks pretty stupid.
It isn't. It's totally awesome.
See?
ShopSamonade.com, pick up your Darmalars shirt.
The golden ticket is still out there, which
it's still out there, which is concerning me that not enough people are getting the shirts because...
But it's an incentive. If you haven't ordered your shirt yet, or if you know someone that would like one, go ahead and make that order. And if you get the golden ticket, you'll be able to record with us, which is a fun little surprise.
Uh-huh.
Also, you'll get some more Darmalars swag. We'll put together a bag of goodies for you.
Definitely.
So,
that's all I have for this
week.
That's it. It's a pretty long show today.
It is.
And we still have to get to the Lars line.
Well, you know, it's because we're back. We were excited to be back, and we haven't recorded in a while, so it felt good to talk. So,
yes. Definitely.
But next time we talk, no, nothing will have happened. I won't have moved out just yet. But soon. It's getting soon. So that's it. Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for all of your feedback we've been getting on the MySpace and the Gmail address. It's always a lot of fun to hear back from you guys. So watch our movies, watch Ed Wood and
Hitchhiker's Guide,
and let us know what you thought. for everyone here at the Lars Mansion, back home again in Orange County, this has been Lars De La Vista.
And this is Ralph. Playtime is over.
Mitt Rob doesn't like being disrespected. Mitt Rob was upset when you did not play Mitt Rob's voice message. But I still love the show, guys. Mitt Rob out. Yo.
Hey, Ralph and Ben. This is Chad in New Hampshire. Just listening to a back podcast. Realized you guys are planning on watching the Simpsons movie. Just want to say, like, as a movie music lover, you probably ought to boycott that one because they totally dissed Alf Clausen, who's been the composer for through all the seasons except for the first one of the Simpsons. They didn't even ask for his input in the new movie, and you know, they didn't even ask him if he wanted to be part of it. They just completely blew him off. So, you know, as a loyal fan of Alf Clausen, I'm not going to be watching that movie, and I think anybody who enjoys the Simpsons TV show should boycott the movie. Talk to you later. Bye.
What's up, Starbalard? What's up, Ralph and Ben? This is Jerry calling LA. I'm LA. This is what I'm here choking to death. Y'all, motherfuckers are stupid. Y'all are funny as shit. Here you go. I'm listening to the podcast about the lost panel. And you go on and talk about, like, Ralph was talking about taking pictures. And Picture. I'm a camera. That's the fucking shit I heard all week. Oh my God. I don't know what the hell y'all was high on. Well, y'all was high on the con, as you say. But that shit was fucking priceless. Yeah, for about 2 weeks now, ever since Psych came back on. Never really watched the show, but, you know, I watched the season premiere, and it was the funniest fucking episode where these fools were singing. I thought that was the funniest shit I've seen in a while. But this that little, just that little bit of comedy right there, just a few words, have me over here in tears and stitches, as they say. All right, you guys take it easy. Hope y'all enjoyed the whole kamikaze thing, you know what I'm saying? I'll be there next year, definitely, you know what I'm saying? But that's all I got right now. Can't stick shit in the queue this week. Alright, leak. I'm a camera.
Hi, this is Karen from the Metro Bars, and I'm sitting in a lovely little Mexican bar with Ralph and Ben from the Dharma Lars and Jay from the Jay and Jack Lost Podcast, and my co-host John, and some lovely, wonderful people like Director Cliff and Fanjana. And I would just like to pose a question to all the viewers, listeners out there. How many margaritas does it take to get a...
The answer to the question is one.
Hey, Dharma Lars, or the Lars. This is Adam from Fort Worth, Texas. First time caller, just calling in a little late. I'm high on the podcast, but in response to Return of the Jedi, I listened to a bunch of calls of people complaining about, especially the biggest complaint is about the Ewoks. And I wanted to clear some stuff up. You don't have to play this, but just a little tidbit of knowledge that back in, you know, in the 70s when Lucas was doing American Graffiti and just after THX, when he was with American Zoetrope Pictures with Francis Ford Coppola, they were working on a project about Vietnam, which eventually became Heart of Darkness or Apocalypse Now, what it's called now. And Lucas was originally pitched and planned to be the director of that, and Coppola was going to produce. Well, studio arguments and stuff came up, so eventually Coppola became the director. But Lucas always wanted to tell that story of the Vietnam War and a small group of people overcoming a giant empire, in other words, America. So he told it in a different form. That's Return of the Jedi, and Star Wars in general is supposed to tell that tale of small group of rebels overcoming that. And Return of the Jedi, he made Ewoks in the end instead of Wookiees to make it more unbelievably, in fact, that a small group of people, actually literally small, would overthrow this huge empire. So a lot of people complain that it looks silly, but it's actually supposed to be that way. It's supposed to symbolize that, essentially Vietnam War, his social commentary on that issue in American history. So a little bit of knowledge on that. Hope I thought I'd shed some light and clear up some misconceptions about the film, which is probably my favorite Star Wars movie, that or Avengers. So can't wait for the next show, guys. Bye. Hey, Ben and Ralph, this is Adam again from Fort Worth, Texas. I called earlier about Return of the Jedi and Vietnam War tie-in and stuff. I was going to call and I left out that I read that in a book called Conversations with Walter Murch, and it's a really, really good book. I know you guys are film buffs, so you might enjoy it. What it is, it's essentially a bunch of interviews with Walter Murch, of course, the famous film motion picture editor. He's very, very interesting. He's been with a lot of directors, and so that's where I got that little bit of knowledge from. So yeah, it's called Conversations with Walter Murch. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Yo, Darth Malars, it's Brady, listener 24601. And I rented Run Ronnie Run because I stuck it in my queue. And honestly, didn't think it was as good as I thought it would be because I've seen Mr. Show and I've seen Arrested Development, and I love both of those shows. And Dave Cross wasn't as funny as he normally is. Bob Odenkirk wasn't as funny as he normally is. And while it had really funny cameos from almost everyone in Hollywood, it just, I don't know, just didn't seem as funny as, like, even the worst episode of Mr. Show. That's why I only gave it, like, 3 stars, because I liked it, but, you know, it wasn't that good. But it did have funny scenes in it, like, you know, Jack Black singing that song. which was really funny. But honestly, it just didn't feel like something of their own. And so it's something that they would really put out. And it kind of reflected in their work. I don't know what was up with that. I don't know. But thank you for the recommendation, though. I'll keep on sticking anything else that you recommend in my queue. Because you told me to see Brick, and I love that. It's my favorite movie. Kind of reminds me of Romeo and Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann version, because something taken completely out of context, out of the context that it would normally be in, saw Top Secret. That was pretty funny. What else can I... Can't think of anything else right now. Oh yeah, I saw The 39 Steps. And even though The 39 Steps was a very old movie, it was still a very good movie. It was fun to see a Wrong Man movie. It was just, you know, older movies are a little harder to follow, but, you know, it was the middle of the day, so I was awake, so I could follow it. So thank you for the recommendation on both those movies. And, love the show. Hope you guys had fun at Comic-Con. And, yeah. Smishy Boochies. Okay, bye.
Hey, Ralph and Ben. This is Ryan in Minneapolis calling. I just got out of the Bourne Ultimatum. I wanted to call you while it was still fresh in my mind. I know, Ralph, you're a big fan of the score by John Powell. I am, too, a huge fan. It's one of the things I love about the movie. I must say, score in this one was good, but it seemed just really rehashed. The second one improved on the first movie score, but this one seemed to just not do anything really that inventive or interesting. But there's a couple spots that were pretty sweet. Anyway, you guys rock. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, what's up, Lars? This is Dre coming out of L.A. and giving my review on The Simpsons. I think pretty much when you watch the beginning of the show, you pretty much, you know, he tells you the truth. You know what I'm saying? The beginning of the movie tells you the truth. I actually liked it. I really did like the show and everything, but yeah, it wasn't not so much. It wasn't that. Don't worry about that. I'm at work. So yeah. I mean, the movie was cool. I didn't think I wasted my money, you know, or anything. It was good. I mean, it was a Simpsons movie. I would have been just as happy if it would have came on 11, or I guess due to some scenes, it would have came on HBO or Starz or something. Okay, so I guess that's it. I don't want to ruin it for all the Johnny Come Latelys out there. Alright, that's it. That's all I got. Late. Hey, what's up, Lars? This is Jay coming out of LA. Okay, I don't know if my other one went through, but this is really for you guys. I'm not like anything pertaining to the show, even though it's about the show. Anyway, okay, this site is called operator11.com, and it's a cool thing because, okay, first of all, it's free. And, like, let's say you want to do video. Okay, they had a video and all that stuff, so it don't cost you anything. The thing is, like, let's say you guys want to put out a video version of your show. So, like, you can, you go on there, you sign up, whatever, like I said, it's free, and you'll do your show or whatever. I think, like, when you begin, it's like 15 or 30 minutes, but the more popular you get, the more time you get. I heard about it through this show called AGI, which is All Games Interactive or whatever. If you guys remember the dude Scott Rubin that was on G4 TV, he's the one that really run that show or whatever. He's the host. But anyway, so yeah, like I said, if you guys want to do a show and involve some of the guys or whatever, some of the people that call in or whatever, you can do the show. And then the cool thing is that they got webcam or whatever, they can actually interact with the show where they'll send it to you guys in a request, and they'll talk, the camera switch over to them, they'll talk, they'll play like a little clip or something funny or whatever, and then you switch back or whatever to you guys or whatever, and you know, it's kind of like Skype in a way mixed with YouTube/MySpace. And right now, the only thing on there that's good is AGI, but everybody else is these emo kids that be hanging out, you know, just ragging on each other or whatever. But it's a cool thing. Like I said, it's free. And then the guy even said that eventually he's going to pay people, I guess, like if the show get real, real popular. It's a cooler idea or whatever, you know, for you guys to, when you think about doing like a little video thing, you know, put it up on there or whatever and people could go to it. Just go to it and check it out when they want to and all that other stuff. It's cool. Alright, that's it, you know. Like I said, it was about the Lars, but it wasn't, you know, anything in particular. Well, I guess that was particular. Alright, now I'm rambling. Late.
Boo, Angel. Boo.